If you have your syllabus out, we're in part four, Reaping Bountifully, part four. It's the last in our series of putting your finances in order. Remind you, our goal is godliness with contentment. Godliness with contentment is great gain. You know, I can live with not having very much money. I can be happy, and I can be content. But one thing I can't be content with is mismanaging money. For God to provide something for me, and for me to not use it properly or to care for it properly. So it is important that we are good stewards, and that's what we talked about the last time. This time, if you manage your money, you handle it properly, you'll see that there are benefits that go along with that. For 2 Corinthians 9:6, "But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." So there is a biblical principle that sowing, you then reap. You have to be able to invest to be able to get a return. You have to be able to give for God to give back and provide for you. So we are to sow bountifully. In doing so and in handling our money, integrity is very important and a very valuable treasure. We want to be honest with our dealings with people and honest with the money that God has given us. Total honesty means telling the truth even when it hurts or it might be counterproductive for us. If we go to Home Depot for some reason, seems like we go there a lot because I see many of you there when I go, you walk out and you realize, oh, they didn't charge me for this one item. It's here in the basket. Now, lack of integrity would say, yeah, I made it. I got out and they didn't charge me. It's free. But if you have integrity, you say, cannot do that. This is going to shortchange the company. This is not right. I've got to be honest. I've got to take that back in there and pay for it. Even if you're in a hurry and you have to leave, you've got to make it right. A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. And by the way, a balance was a weight put on a balance scale to determine how much money or how much weight something would be. So if you cheat on that and it's not accurate, that's dishonesty. A good reputation means you must not cheat or steal, even in small things, even in little areas, even things at work. So we have to be careful about what we do, because a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. So our reputation is very important, and the way we handle money very often determines what our reputation might be. A godly man will never take advantage of anyone in his dealings. You might go to someone that is a widow, elderly, and you might think, they don't really know what this costs. You do work for them. You overcharge them. That's dishonest. That's not integrity. As a matter of fact, for someone who might be vulnerable or weak, a widow, an orphan, the Bible indicates we should be more considerate of them, perhaps even doing it for free. So we want to consider never take advantage of anyone in our dealings. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Integrity means having a clear conscience in all financial dealings. We know that we've dealt honestly with people. I remember a man asked if I would help him put up hay one day. And that's out in the farm, in the country, that was a common thing every summer. And it was usually 100 degrees every time we put up hay. There's some reason it was time that 100 degrees, all right, it's time to put up hay. So this guy didn't have anybody to help him. I said, sure, I'll be glad. I'll come and help you. And he had a truck instead of a wagon. The truck bed is about this high. And I'm probably about 7th, 8th grade, something like that. Bales of hay are about 100 pounds. There was nobody else out there. And I think maybe it was 300 or 400 bales of hay I put up by myself. And I helped this guy out. And he brought me home. I know I wasn't old enough to drive yet because he brought me home. And he said, how much do I owe you? And you know, the common response in the country and certainly my family was, you know, whatever you think. And he gave me $3. $3. I had worked all day, put all this up for him. Now, if he'd give me $1 an hour, that wouldn't have been so bad, because that was not uncommon. But $3 to work as hard as I worked all day, that was dishonest. And you know what? I never worked for that guy again. Integrity means having a clear conscience. Acts 24:16, and herein do I exercise myself, to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward men. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms to my nation and offerings. 1 Timothy 3:3, not greedy of filthy lucre, talking about money, not covetous, which is one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not covet. All those are important to have a clear conscience. Integrity in money matters has to do with being honest and upright, even when no one is looking or no one knows. It means acting according to biblical principles, even if you think you'll never get caught, because you know that God is watching and you want to please Him. And I want to tell you something tonight. God honors a person who is honest in their dealings. When you're dishonest, it somewhere down the line catches up to you. God honors people who are honest. There are some things money cannot buy, like manners, morals, integrity, common sense, respect, character, and love. Those are more valuable. Here is the problem that people begin with. They have a certain set income, a certain amount of money that comes in. So with that money, they have to pay their taxes, and they have living expenses, and maybe they're a Christian, they're tithing, they're giving, then they have debt, and they're trying to pay off their debt. And what happens to people very often is they're stuck right here. That's all the money they have. And they live hand to mouth, week by week. So everything they do, it goes just to live, and just all those expenses in there. Rather than getting ahead and saving money and putting money away, they just live day to day, and they do that maybe all their life. But the important thing is, if you're a good financial manager, is to always have a little bit extra, and you can put that money somewhere, you can invest that somewhere, you can do something with it. And so there are different goals that you may have. As an example, is it a surprise that your children actually grow up and graduate one day? Is that a shock to you that you didn't expect that to happen? And now they're going to go to college, and that they actually need money to go to college? Is that a surprise? Well, when you're young and your children are first born, wouldn't it be a wise thing to start saving money or help them save money? Sure, it would be a good thing. That would be a goal. But, you know, you can't do it if you live right there. You're just surviving. But if you have a little bit extra, that might be one of the goals that you have. You might want to invest some money, put some money in a stock market or mutual fund, or buy something that you get a return on. You may end up owning a house, or you save up and then you buy a home, and there's something called capital appreciation. You bought it for $150,000, it's now worth $180,000. It's appreciated in value. So you've gained a little bit there. And then maybe you're saving for college, for your kids, or for yourself. Maybe you've increased your giving. That was one of your goals, maybe to support a missionary. Maybe you're looking toward retirement or getting out of debt. All those things come as a result of having a little bit extra. And in the end, that's your goal, financial freedom. It means you're not entangled. You're not just living right here. And if you live there all the time, you never accomplish any of these goals. That's why you have to get to a place where, remember the order we said? First thing you do is get out of debt. You develop emergency fund, enough for 3 to 6 months in case you lost a job or something happened. Then you start, after you develop emergency fund, start saving. And after you save, you start investing for whatever reason, to buy a home, to go to college, or for your children, or retirement, or whatever it might be. So if you reach that point, eventually God provides for you. You've been wise. It's called delayed gratification. You said, I'll get by it without a little bit now so that I'll have more later. All right? When our finances are in order, there are many ways in which we can be blessed by handling them properly by being a good steward. Okay, financial freedom. You have to have food. Now, I don't know anybody that says, look, I'm not going to eat from now on. You have to have that. That's one of the things that's necessary. If you don't have enough money to buy food, you're going to starve to death. So God can provide for you. If you're good at handling your money, He can provide clothing, food and clothing. Also, shelter, happy home, a reliable car. Now, a car is a depreciating asset. However, everybody's got to have one. You can't get to work in very few cases. Now, if you live in New York City, you'd probably get by without a car. But most people, you have to have a car. So to be able to have a car, a reliable car, that's an important thing. So if you're financially free, you're able to afford that car and to have it and maintain it. A house, retirement, and the ability to give. You know, you're a member of a church, you want to do things for people and help others and support missions and support projects within the church. So when you reach that point, you're a good steward, you're able to accomplish those things. Now, there's some reasonable financial goals that can be met. We mentioned financial freedom. That should be a goal. I don't want to be entangled. I don't want to be worrying about money all the time. I want to be able to provide for the basic needs that I have and achieve these goals long term. So financial freedom, it helps you enjoy that. It's much more than having money. It's the freedom to live a life for God to its fullest, learning God's biblical principles of finance, practicing them in order to become debt-free. Actually, it's a path to know Christ more intimately and be financially free to serve Him. This means, however, that you must trust God and be willing to submit to His will and direction. And just remind you that any possessions we have, God can take from us. You could lose it tomorrow. Thermonuclear warfare could break out tomorrow and everything falls apart. But God doesn't. He's still there. So we can trust Him and depend upon Him. Secondly, contentment. We mentioned that godliness contentment is great gain. You can be just as content as a young married couple not having any furniture because you can't yet afford it. You may be just as happy. I mean, if you say, we can't afford a big honeymoon, we'll go camping. We'll put a tent out in the woods. You'll remember that forever. In fact, everybody will remember that you did that because that's a little unusual. So you can be content with what you have, with where you live, with the car you drive. You can be content. That's important. A happy home and a peaceful life. You know, that's, as they say, priceless. To be able to go home in a loving environment where you care for one another, you help and encourage one another, that's part of one of our goals. That's what we're trying to accomplish. If you go home and everybody's arguing about money and bill collectors are calling, that's not good. We want to have a happy, peaceful home. Number four, the ability to give. The ability to, we have a special offering tonight. Missionaries come, they're going to a very needy area and they need support. You're able to help them. You know, that's a wonderful thing. I know sometimes people, they tell all these jokes about preachers asking for money and how the church always asks for money. But the truth is, if we never took an offering, we never took money from anybody, there would be people upset because they want to give to the Lord. They understand the importance of doing that. And so the more you handle and your finances properly and are a good steward, you're able to give. And then number five, an adequate place to live, a comfortable place to live. The first 2 years we rented an apartment. The next 10 years we lived in one of the apartments up above. And at the time, the only thing the church could afford was we remodeled it by moving paneling. It was already 30 years old. We took it off. We nailed it back up again. Carpeting was 25, 30 years old. We moved around, and the windows were steel industrial windows, and a fire marshal made it so that we really couldn't even open them. And so it would get hot there on the second floor. And our family was growing. We're getting bigger. You know what? We were contented to be there. You know, there was times, you know, it got a little bit hot up there and there were problems. We had to carry in water for a couple of years because the well was contaminated. And, you know, we had a few problems. But it didn't quite fit. You know, I had all these children, had four kids, and, you know, things were a little tight. But the truth is, we'd fit back there again. We may kick somebody out, we'll move back in. But, you know, it was good enough. You know, we were happy being there. We had a place to stay. We have to learn to be comfortable and be thankful for what we have. A reliable car. Now, maybe there's no such thing. That may be a misnomer, a reliable car. But we'll say a reasonably reliable car, where most of the time you turn the key and it starts, and most of the time it gets you where you want to go. Ample clothing. You know, clothing is expensive, and that's another thing. If we're good stewards, we'll be able to afford ample clothing and clothing for our children. Sufficient food, being able to buy for the basic needs of our family, and maybe a comfortable retirement. This guy looks pretty comfortable to me. A comfortable retirement. Doesn't mean we have to have tons of money, but to be able to retire and not be always anxious and worried, how are we going to make it through the month? So good stewardship will normally do those things if we set those as goals in our lives. 1 Timothy 6:6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, it is certain we carry nothing out. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. So that's a very important verse, to be able to accept what we have, be thankful for what we have, and be good stewards of what God's given us. Savings increase and investments can grow if we're good stewards. There are many ways to invest, and with the help of financial counsel, you can sit down, discuss your investment strategy with someone. I'm sure there's people that can help you. You can learn on your own. Every person has a different level of risk tolerance, as well as different goals in life. And so a balanced strategy is a good thing to follow. But for someone who's very young, it's going to be different than someone who's just retiring. If you're retiring, you don't want to buy something that has a high risk to it and end up losing it all when, you know, you have no way to recover. If you're younger, you could probably tolerate more risk, depending on your personality. And maybe you'll have a greater return. And if something goes bad, usually it'll recover. And you'll have time for it to recover. So it's important for somebody to sit down with you and ask you all those questions. How old are you? What are your goals? You know, how long will it be before you retire? What kind of retirement do you have? What's your risk tolerance? You know, if you're going to wake up every morning and listen to what the stock market's doing, you know, maybe you don't need to be in the stock market. You know, you have to be able to know those things. Someone can sit down and counsel you and help you determine that. If you're a young person, a teenager, or college student, you have different goals than people that are married and have children. And so you need to know what those are for someone to help and guide you. Now, there are different ways, then, that you can invest. Having an IRA, particularly a Roth IRA, or some kind of a KEO or retirement account, is one of the things that when you enter the workforce, at the very latest, you can do it even as a young person, but at the very latest, you need to set up something when you're young. So an individual retirement account is something that probably everybody should have. And if it's a Roth, it grows without any tax consequence. You don't pay capital gains on it. And that's a real advantage. You can only put so much in, depending on your age and your income as to how much you can put in. But you put in as much as you can. And you only put so much every year. But if you keep adding that, you can invest in it, grows. That's something that should be established. And the way you invest in that, you can buy fixed equities or fixed income, CDs, or you can buy regular equities, that stocks and bonds are different things you can buy and put in that. But to set up the account, and then you figure out how you want to invest your money in that retirement account. Fixed income investments are things like certificates of deposit. You get a passbook savings, and you know, you go to the bank and they give you 1 point nothing for whatever money you put in there. And, you know, that's something, but, you know, it's better than nothing. But right now, fixed income bonds and various things are, they're just not paying very much. And for people who are retiring, that's particularly difficult because they want that security. But it's hard to know where do you put your money now, because I can't get more than 1% and I can't live off of that. So, you know, that's a real challenge. So CDs and money markets are so very similar, annuities of various sorts. By the way, I know that TD Bank, where we do most of our banking, the church does our banking, I questioned about this. They were selling people, or I don't know, they weren't really selling them, but they were advising them to get an annuity. It really was an annuity, but if you put your money in for like 5 years, you got a little more interest, 2 or 3%. You got to leave it in 5 years. So there's a multitude of things out there, I'm sure, that none of us are aware of all of them. So you can check with your bank, and if you have others that give you investment advice, treasury bills. But all those fixed income assets, municipal bonds, all those are very low return at this time. Eventually that'll change, but when, we don't know. Bank savings account, we mentioned that already. So there are those fixed income investments. And then there's stocks and bonds. And we're not going to bore everybody with this if you're not interested, but some people have some interest in it. And right now, bonds are a bit volatile because if interest rates go up, they go down. And it's hard to believe interest rates are going to go down anymore for bonds to go up. But there are bonds you can get and have a set return on it. They're municipal bonds, which you buy like from the town or a state, federal bonds. You can get corporate bonds, like big companies, say IBM, they may have bonds, and Caterpillar, you can buy bonds from them. So you can buy them and keep them through the term, but the interest rates, again, are fairly low on all those. And then there are stocks that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, the basic kinds of stocks. Sometimes you don't know how to invest, so you go to one of the big companies, say Vanguard, one of the discount companies, and say, I want to buy, you know, your value fund or something like that. And so you can buy a mutual fund. What they do is they have someone who runs that fund, and they invest it for you, basically. And then, you know, you get the certain amount of return out of the profit they make, and they get a certain amount of profit from it. So, you know, you can buy mutual funds. You can get ETFs, which are exchange-traded funds. This you can trade yourself. On the market, you can trade minute by minute. If you have a level 2 screen with E-Trade or Schwab or someone like that, you can actually see the trades as they're being made. You can actually buy it and watch it. Oh, there it went. You know, it happens like that. So you can buy ETFs and trade them. And basically what they do is they will collect a certain type of stocks, a little bit of each one, and then you're buying that ETF that trades all those little things for you. And I'll give you one piece of advice. If you don't know anything about the stock market, and you say, oh, it's a big gamble, well, you can be wasteful in anything you do. But if you want to beat 90% of all the wise people and gurus and the talking heads on TV, I'll give you one simple piece of advice. If you buy the stock symbol, the ETF, SPY, you're buying the S&P 500, and that's the one thing all these guys are trying to shoot for. They all want to beat the S&P, and if they ever beat the S&P, they brag, I beat the S&P this year. And so why not be the thing they're trying to beat? And you don't, it's not real difficult, it's not hard to do. You just buy it and leave it in there. And I heard a piece of advice just recently that over the last 20 years, and remember, we had the dot-com bubble burst, we had the financial crisis during this last 20 years. For people who traded in and out of the market, they had a 5% average year return over that period of time. For the people that left their money in the market that whole time, never touched it, went down, went up, down, went up, 9% return. That doesn't mean you can't trade in and out of the market, but I know personally people who've day traded who've lost a fortune. Talked to a guy on an airplane. He said, You know, I was day trading. I made $1 million in 1 year. And I said, wow, what'd you do with it? He said, I lost it. Day trading. That's a little different story. There are people who do that, and they may know what they're doing. They may be good at it, but that's not the average person does. So you can buy a simple ETF. You can buy the Russell 2000. You can buy the Dow Jones Industrial. That's DIA. I think it's IWM for the Russell 2000. And you can just buy one of those. Just leave it in there. Now, if you're older and you want dividends, you can't get dividends out of that. But you can just, you're buying the market, and you're beating just about everybody out there. So that's free. Some of you weren't interested. You can buy dividend-paying stocks. This is another interesting concept that if you were to buy major companies that you know, Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, John Deere, I like John Deere, things that you buy in your home, General Mills, things like that, they'll generally pay 2, 3, 4% a year in dividend. And if they grow by 2 or 3% a year, you've got a 5 or 6% return on your money. That's not a bad deal in this environment. So there are things that you could do in stocks that you feel they're not going to go bankrupt tomorrow. These are well-established companies, and they pay, you know, a small dividend, a reasonable dividend, and then they grow over a period of time. So that's one way to do it. And then growth stocks. Some of my grandchildren bought Apple. They didn't know what they were doing, but, you know, somebody helped them. But they bought Apple at $70. And what is it today? Does anybody remember, like 800? I haven't looked at it recently, but...
Well, it's split. It's about 109 now.
Oh, I'm thinking of Google. Yeah, it's 109. Is that right? I don't know what it is. He knows, all right. So, you know, you can buy something like that. The idea is it's going to grow, and they don't pay a dividend most of the time, although maybe Apple does now, but do they pay a dividend? I thought so. They may not pay a dividend, but they're growing. Google was that way. You know, they were growing leaps and bounds, and they figure they're going to reinvest their money. So if you're younger and you can withstand the money to go up and down. By the way, if you look at a day stock chart, it looks like a water bug. There's no possible way for you to know where it's going. As a matter of fact, I read an article last week, and one caption was, crude oil is going to be $60 by the summer. The very next article, crude oil is going to $15. They're both experts, supposedly. You know what that tells me? They don't know. No one really knows. What you do know is you can look at the past and you can see a reasonable rate of return of 6% in the stock market over a long period of time, maybe more than that. But so it's not necessarily a gamble if you invest in the right way. You can dollar cost average. As you get a certain amount of money, you just keep putting it in ever so often. So there are different ways to invest in all that. Corporate bonds can be a good thing where you get a fixed rate from good companies. Then you can invest in real estate. And I remind you, this is not for every person. Anything you do, there's a learning curve and you have to learn what to do. But some people think, if I buy a home, it's always a good deal. Not necessarily. And I've had people run the numbers. Sometimes people actually made out better financially by renting than buying. That's a surprise to a lot of people. In Phoenix, Arizona, where Dave Crichton started the church, I was very familiar with what happened there. Investors were buying property, selling them 2 months later for a profit. And I said to Dave, I said, it won't always go up. He said, oh, no, not here. It's always going to go up. Within 3 years, that the bubble burst. And they would sell you a home for half the price and give you another home for free in Phoenix, Arizona. We bought our home in 1985, 86. It lost 30% value in the first 5 years we owned it. It can go down. Now, if you're going to live in it, you have the blessing and enjoyment of owning a home. And if you're not planning on moving, it doesn't matter. Right now in our state, there's no upward pressure on real estate right now. People are leaving and they can't sell their home. So is that a good time to buy? I don't know. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. There's money can be made. You know, we watch these programs out in California. These people are buying a home. They remodel it. They flip the house. And they made $100,000. You know, that's not going to happen. They might have done that, but it's not going to happen around here. It's got to be a very unusual situation. And if you're not familiar with what you're doing, you can lose a lot of money. And I've known people that have lost money buying and selling. But there can be money made. As I mentioned, you're starting out, buy a three-family home. Two rents pay for your mortgage. That's a good way to do it. It's a safer investment. If the value of the home goes down a little bit, eventually, probably, it'll catch up to you if you stay in it long enough. So some of these things are not good. You can buy houses. It could be a good thing if you know what you're doing, multifamily homes, apartment buildings, land development, REITs or real estate investment trusts. If you don't know what you're doing, that's some way you can invest through the stock market. And often they'll have a pretty good dividend, maybe 5 or 6%. But again, it fluctuates basically with the house market. So coins, cars, collections, some people get involved in that. Some people actually have gold or silver in their home. Don't tell anybody if you do. Or if you have collectible guns, don't tell anybody. Profit sharing or employer matching funds. If your employer does profit sharing or if they do matching funds, and they'll say, if you put in $100 in your savings, we'll put in $50 on top of it. That's free money. Do all that you can to have them match that. That's a great thing. Fewer people are doing it, but some places they are. If you can do that, that's a great, great help. Now let's go on. Giving, the miracle of God's provision. Giving to God does not make you poor. Does not make you poor. If you took the average Christian in this church, and you've been here a long time, you will have given at least a few $100,000 over the lifetime that you're in church. You think, I could have paid off my home with that. I could have bought a brand new car, $100,000 car. I could have. You know, the amazing thing is, God still provided for you. Still have a home, still have a car, still have a place to live. Giving to God does not make you poor. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. When people are stingy and they don't know how to give, it seems like they don't have money. There's just something about it. The Bible says, give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. For the same measure that you meet withal shall be measured to you again. Giving is not based upon your ability. Sometimes people think, well, I don't have very much. That's not the point. God just wants your love and your loyalty, your faithfulness. It's not based on how much money you have. Remember, Jesus sat by the treasury and he saw all the people cast in much. But this one poor widow cast in two mites. She was the one recognized because she gave all. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, how that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. Now I could picture this church, or any of those churches of Macedonia, and somebody said, you know, in Jerusalem there's a lot of people in poverty, and they sacrificed. They got the gospel to us. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't even be saved. You know, they're starving to death. You know what we're going to do? We're going to take up an offering. You know what? I don't have very much money, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take the money that we were going to use for food this week, and I'm going to send it to them. That's what they were doing, stuff like that. They were giving beyond. I mean, it wasn't the extra. They were giving beyond. Somebody said, you know what I'm going to do? I've got a house payment. I'm going to send that. I don't know how, but God's going to take care of it. I'm going to send that. And another day, and they kept trying to top one another. You know, I'll give this, I'll give that. There was something about them giving, and they were giving beyond the ability they even had to give. And yet, they're noted here in Scripture how God blessed them. I'm not suggesting, by the way, that you next Sunday give your house mortgage or your food bill. I'm just telling you what they did. And I believe God directed them to do what they did. God is concerned with how you give. How you give. And Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how people cast money into the treasury. And many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and saith unto them, Verily I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast more in than all they which have cast in the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all she had, even all her living. In 2004, we started New England Baptist College. That summer, we were trying to raise money to be able to afford it, to be able to pay as much as we could down on it, the 12 months prior to it. We were in Indiana, and there was my first grade teacher. My first grade teacher was a widow from a young age. Her husband died, and her children were very small. My wife's very close to him, and she was in the same church as my wife. But she was my first grade teacher, and I knew her very, very well. She lived in a very meager double wide. It's like two trailers put together. She was always a widowhead, and in those days, teachers did not make very much money. I mean, they were at the bottom of the totem pole. And she had lived all her life very, very meager in that way. And we stopped to visit her, and she said, you know, I want to give some money to the college. And she said, you know, all I can do is $500. I'd like to do $1,000. I wish I could, but I'm telling you, I felt like I was this tall. Here is this woman who's lived, I mean, I don't know if she ever had a new dress. She had raised her children as a widow. She taught in a public school, but for very little income. And she said, I want to help. And I know she didn't have a lot of money. For her, that was a great sacrifice. I want to tell you something. There is no one who gave any more than that lady did to New England Baptist College. She's with the Lord today. God's concerned about how you give. With a willing mind. It says, for if there be first a willing mind. We have to be willing. It has to be a heart decision. With a proper heart. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart. Some people purpose in their heart they're not going to give. They're going to hold on to it. But the Bible says, according as he purposeth in his heart, let him give. Cheerfully and not grudgingly. It should be a blessing to be able to give. God loves a cheerful, and the word cheerful we know means hilarious. Someone who, they just love to give. God loves that. Sacrificially. Remember when David bought the land where they built the temple, the threshing floor? And he said, I'll just give it to you. And he said, oh no, I'll not take something like this that costs me nothing. I'm going to pay for it. We are to give proportionally. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in stores. God hath prospered him. Systematically, should be in a regular way. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store. Or if you get paid biweekly or monthly, you know, if some people have a fixed income, you get a monthly check. You want to give monthly, that's fine. But systematically, where you do it all the time. And the Bible tells us how God does bless people that give. I mean, it's just the truth. Malachi knows an Old Testament verse, but the principle is still true. It says, bring you all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Now, I don't know about you, but I like blessings that are so big I can't hardly take it all in. That's the way God blesses, that you can't even take it all in. You say, well, that's Old Testament. Do we have a different God for the New Testament? Did we change gods? If he could do that in the Old Testament, can't he do that in the New Testament? Sure he can. And it's one of those things that does not make sense. You just can't figure it out. You can't put it on paper. And yet you look at it and you say, wow, look at what God did. Look at how he provided. Living for God makes your money go farther. I really do believe that. New family gets saved, or a new couple, they get saved, and they say, wow, we're in debt. You know, what should we do? Should we tithe, or should we wait till we get our bills paid and then start tithing? And I say, the first thing you need to do is put God first. If you put God first, your money will go farther, and you do better at paying your bills. And I've seen people try to do the opposite, and they never get to the point where they get out of debt. There's just something about it. When you put God first, you're accountable to him. That, it just seems like it makes your money go farther. Haggai 1:6 says, you have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you're not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put it into a bag with holes. Just like this poor man right here. He worked hard, but just like it disappeared. You know, and that happens to people. They keep spending their money, and they're mismanaged, they're not good stewards. It's like just throwing money out the window. It keeps going away. But when we're good stewards, it goes farther. You must recognize that your attitude concerning money is a serious matter, a serious concern. Remember what happened to Ananias and Sapphira? They lied to the Holy Spirit concerning their money, and it cost them their lives. You know, that seems pretty severe. Well, God's concerned about our testimony, and particularly about lying about something like that. The love of money wars against our desire to serve God. Matthew 6:24, we've already read it, says we cannot serve God and mammon. So there is that conflict. Who are we going to serve? And the desire for wealth has hindered many from serving God. Judas Iscariot, remember Elijah's servant Gehazi? He wanted to take the money that was to be given to Elijah. Lot went into Sodom, and there, yeah, he probably made a lot of money, but he lost a lot too. It was at a great price. Those who are blessed should use their money for the Lord. 1 Timothy 6:17, charge them that are rich in this world. Be not high-minded. That's important. Not nor trust in uncertain riches. So he's challenging us. He's challenging believers. Don't be high-minded. Don't be high and think, I know everything. Don't trust just in your money or uncertain riches. Do good. All this right out of the passage in 1 Timothy 6. Be rich in good works. Do good for people. Do good things. Honor the Lord. Serve God. Be ready to distribute, ready to help others, ready to do things for others. The Lord is so good to allow us to have the necessary money to provide for our needs. And may our heart attitude toward money be right. Let's use it for His glory. As we said earlier, all of our possessions are really not ours. They're God's. God owns it all. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. He owns the hills. He owns everything we have, but we're stewards of what he gave us. So it's important just to handle what he's given us in the right way. Frances Havergal said in her song, Take My Life and Let It Be, take my silver and my gold, not a mite would I withhold. She had the right attitude and understood the importance of consecration. There's a man who gave 90% of his money. There's another example I almost used that I think his name is Henry Tam. It was called, and there's a little movie made of it years ago called God Owns My Business. Brother Brown, did you ever see that? Yeah. That God Owns My Business, and he just kept giving more and more to the Lord, and finally he said, I'm going to give the business to the Lord. And every penny that came in, he just gave it to God. This story is about another man, R.G. Letourneau, Letourneau College, one of their graduates, a member of our church here. He was a Christian industrialist. He dedicated his life to being a businessman for God. He was hugely successful. He designed, developed his own line of earth-moving equipment. Letourneau was a make, by the way, something called a turnipole, which you may be familiar with. He invented that. He was the maker of nearly 300 inventions. He had hundreds of patents in his lifetime. And as he succeeded financially, he increased his giving to the point where he was giving 90% of his income to the Lord's work. He said, I shovel out the money, God shovels it back. But God has a bigger shovel. You may be thinking, I could give 90% too if I was a multimillionaire. Well, he didn't start out wealthy. And he started out giving sacrificially from a young age or from an early part of his business. It's just God blessed him for what he did. Well, the Bible gives us a description of how we give and use our money in that way for the Lord. Weekly tithes and offerings. Tithe is 10% what we receive and an income, and we should give at least a tenth to the Lord's work through the church. That's what's required by God as a Christian. Money given after the tithe is an offering. An offering is given out of love for the Lord. It's like, I want to give something extra. Here's a special need. So we're not stuck with saying, well, I give 10%, that's it. An offering is over and above that. By the way, the Old Testament Jews had different offerings. They had festive offerings and tithes that they would give for that. So they didn't really give just 10%. They gave something like 23.5% yearly minimum, not counting offerings that they made. In Malachi 3:8 it says, will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to be obedient and have a clear conscience before God. Special offerings and gifts. You can donate stock. You can donate real estate. Actually, the church has an account that you could donate the stock. And think about this. If you had a capital gains on it, you get the benefit of the entire amount as a deduction, and there's no capital gain whatsoever, and you donate the whole thing to the church. That's a good way to give. Real estate would be the same thing. You can give through your will. That if you have family, you certainly want to pass on money to your family and some of the assets that you have. But what if you gave a tithe out of that? You add the church to the to your will. It's a way you could give after you die. It outlives you, you know, and there are people who think of that. We received money this past year. It's a great blessing to the church. Someone remembered the church through their will, and it provided extra income for us. You could establish a charitable trust. I'm not getting into all the details of it, but, you know, we have people who can sit down with you and explain what all that means, but that's another great way to be able to give, and also where it doesn't impoverish you and doesn't create risk for you. Financial freedom allows you to pass on your blessings. So God blessed us, now we can be a blessing to others. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required. To whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. One of the things you can do is provide for the education of your children or grandchildren. Help pay the way for them to go to Christian school. You can help provide for their college education. There's nothing wrong with them working, nothing wrong with them helping pay their own way, but it's a good thing that you can help them, help them some. Maybe have it all paid for them. That's one of the things you can do if you're financially free. You can pass on inheritance to your children or to your grandchildren. Even while you're alive, you can pass on a certain amount of money to them and gift it to them when they need it. I remember my father bought the farm where I grew up, and if I remember right, I believe he paid $1,400 for 80 acres of property, and it had a house on it that it took him a while to find it because there was grown up with weeds and brush, but there was a house on it, and that's where we lived when we first started out. We'd been there about 3 or 4 years, and just from clearing the land, he found another building he didn't even know was on the property. I mean, it was pretty rough shape. But my grandfather loaned him the $1,400. And then I remember going with him, I was very, very young, and my father would go over to his house, you know, ever so often, when sold some animals or something with the market, and he'd go over there, and I remember he'd sit down and get the books out, and he would pay him a certain amount, pay him back, and give that money. Well, you know, that was a blessing to my parents. That enabled them to buy something they could not have afforded. So my grandfather was a blessing to them for them to be able to do that. So there are things you can do to help your children along the way. And by the way, if you help them, there's a good chance they'll help theirs. That's kind of how it works. You can leave money to your church or to a charity. What if somebody passed away? They had no family. Where does the money go? Just go to the government. You know, what happened to it? When they could have used that for the Lord's work, support missionaries, you know, help them Bible college, train young people to serve God. There are a lot of things they could do with it. So that if you're blessed in that way, that you might be able to leave a certain amount of money. There's a man named Art DeMoss. He went to Tennessee Temple to school. He met Dr. Robertson at a meeting, and he said, "Dr. Robertson, I don't know what God wants me to do." He said, "Well, come to Bible college, and you'll figure it out." So he did. He went to Bible college, and I don't know how long he was there. I think maybe it was a year. It wasn't real long. He didn't graduate. But he went to Dr. Robertson. He said, "Dr. Robertson," he said, "I figured it out. I know what God wants me to do." And he went to Philadelphia, and he started a mail-order insurance company. And out of that, it continued to grow and grow and grow. God really blessed him financially. I know at one point he gave $3.5 million to Tennessee Temple. They built an entire dormitory with that money, a large dormitory. I know also that after he died relatively young. And by the way, he was a great soul winner. And I met him, I heard him speak. He was a great soul winner. But when he passed away, he left a trust with money in it that people could call in. It was advertised on television that people could call in and get this booklet to tell them how to get saved. I don't know how many millions of dollars he had, but he was a multi-millionaire. But he did it to honor God. Everything he did was to honor the Lord. That doesn't mean everybody's going to do that. That's not everybody's calling. It's not what everybody does. But there may be someone God does that in their lives. That's a blessing. One of the things that could happen. You might be able to help missionaries. Buy Bibles for them. Get them to the mission field. Maybe their car broke down and they have to buy a vehicle. You say, "I'm going to help them." Maybe you'll be financially free enough, you can go to the mission field. You're retired, and maybe even retire early. Say, "Hey, I'm going to go to the mission field. I want to help the missionary. I want to do something for God." Maybe you can help plant churches. You might even be able to go for a month, or maybe send money, or send a crew down. You know, there's a lot of things that you could do to pass on the blessing God's given you. Buy and distribute Bibles. Pay a student's tuition. Help a student get through Bible college. Send them money periodically. Send a teen to camp. You know, they might get saved, called to preach, and out in the ministry. God can use you to do that. Just volunteer your time. You're free enough that there's something you can do to serve the Lord. Luke 18:22. "Now when Jesus heard these things, he said unto him, Yet lackest thou one thing. Sell all that thou hast and distribute unto the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." There's something that you can't put a price on, and you can't really evaluate the true value of it. But I know this, when we die, we leave it all behind, except what we send ahead. What we do for the Lord and how we serve Him is storing up treasure in heaven. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Your influence can outlive you, and you can store up treasure in heaven. And we have a little poem here. It says, "Lay up treasure in heaven, life will pass away. Lay up treasure in heaven for the great accounting day. Lay up treasure in heaven, though men count thee poor. Thou shalt reign with the sons of God forevermore." Let's bow our heads tonight for a word of prayer.